Welcome to Kingston Reid's Word to the Wise podcast series for HR and safety professionals.
Hello and welcome to the latest installment of Kingston Reid's A Word to the Wise podcast series. I'm Duncan Fletcher and I'm a partner in the Perth office of Kingston Reid. And today I'm joined by my colleagues from Sydney, Jessica Tinsley and Michael Mead. Hi, Jess.
Hi there.
Hi, Michael.
Hi there, Duncan.
Now, today we're going to be looking at the legislative framework that is going to be confronting employers off the back of the huge election win of the Labor Party at the election in May and the changing dynamics in the Parliament, where we now have a Senate, the ultimate arbiter of what legislation is made, made up of the Liberal Party, the Labor Party, and a balance of power being held by the Greens. The government made a number of promises during the election, not as expansive a reform agenda as its first term, but still some important issues that have resulted in promises and some matters that have already been legislated under the new dynamic. And the new dynamic seems to be that government legislation will be passed with the support of the Greens. And at this point in time, there seems to be a limited appetite for the coalition to seek to oppose or amend legislation. The first issue that we're going to look at today is the recent passing of the promised penalty rates bill. Jess and Michael, tell us about your thoughts about that piece of legislation.
Yeah, thanks very much, Duncan. I might lead off. So, right you are. In the new paradigm, the government has had its first legislative win on IR with the passing of the Fair Work Amendment Protecting Penalty and Overtime Rates Act, which commenced operation after receiving royal assent on the 1st of September. So, this legislation effectively gives effect to the Albanese government's pledge through the lead up to the election to legislate such that penalty rates and overtime rates in modern awards would not be reduced. It also had the effect of effectively ensuring that modern awards don't include terms that effectively substitute employee entitlements to receive penalty rates or overtime rates, where those terms would have the effect of reducing the additional remuneration that overtime and penalty rates prescribe under a modern award.
So that means an end to the push from employer associations to effectively introduce exemption rates into awards.
Yeah, look, that's exactly right, Duncan. So it effectively bans variations prospectively in relation to exemption rates and loaded rates. And whilst also, you know, the government didn't introduce provisions that prohibit those terms that as they exist in modern awards currently, look, the practical reality is that if a union were to make application to vary any of those existing awards, and I think there are about 20 odd modern awards that currently have some version of either an exemption rate or a loaded rate arrangement, those awards on application to the union will almost certainly need to be varied to have those conditions removed.
And Jess, from your previous experience working with the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, what is the impact of this baking in of penalty rates on the broader business community and employers throughout Australia?
So this is clearly a big issue for employers. And as you mentioned earlier, there's been a push from employer groups to recently under a number of different awards over the last few years to increase the use of exemption rates in different awards with the current application, which will no longer run dead now on the retail award. So there's certainly some issues there. There's some technical ones which seem to be unanswered that a lot of employer groups are raising concerns around. You know, issues such as, you know, whether the narrowing of the scope of overtime hours constitutes a rate reduction is one. How annualised wage or time off in lieu provisions might be assessed is another question that we'll wait to have to see what happens there. And also another big issue might be whether the Fair Work Commission would be required to test proposed arrangements against not only likely patterns of work, but also fringe or extreme scenarios. So I think that the big issue here is with so much uncertainty around how it's going to be applied. And you look at the legislation, it was a tiny bill. There's not much in there. It's a, you know, big commitments and big changes with not too much detail written into the legislation itself. And certainly the government was saying that they want the Fair Work Commission to take more of the lead in terms of how this might be implemented. But there's certainly some issues here that are going to create some complexities for employers in their use of things such as, you know, annualized salaries and much broader than that as well. I think a key issue we'll need to wait and see is around the impact this might have on employees offering working from home, for instance. You know, that we've got a situation where employers that can't necessarily track when employees are finishing work or ending work, when overtime rates and penalty rights might come into effect. Quite often employers will be relying on exemption rates and annualized salary arrangements for those employees that work from home. So it's going to be really interesting to see whether these complexities in this legislation will lead to a situation where employers are less likely to offer working from home arrangements.
And what you've highlighted is that a small amount of words in an amending bill usually correlates to lots and lots of Fair Work Commission and judicial interpretation that we're going to have to stay tuned to over the next few years. What would you recommend, say, agreements or contractually, as a way of managing this issue for those employers who do value a single rate of pay, an annualized salary, an arrangement where the penalties are taken account of, people are paid fairly, but the payroll and other compliance issues are minimised. What's the solution?
I might take that one. So I think one of the obvious solutions, or one of the areas that we're seeing some employers already countenance, is the idea of common law set-off arrangements. So dealing with these issues through contractual common law contract arrangements to effectively achieve that all up, you know, loaded rate of pay. One of the things that obviously also, as an aside, stands out to me, if you think about the narrative of this amendment as against where some of those applications were looking to head in terms of exemption rates, is whilst it's positioned as something that is designed to ensure that wages are in fact not undercut, the trend in terms of some of those exemption rate cases were to position the exemption rate at a very high level relative to where historically exemption rates had been under the federal award system pre-modernisation. So I think the banking and finance application that was presently before the commission was setting the exemption rate somewhere around 55% above the relevant award rate. And that, to me, was more about a question of trying to ensure that employers could effectively meet their compliance obligations, time and records of when people are working, and trying to avoid potential risks in and around compliance with record keeping, as opposed to seeking to undercut actual remuneration for employees as a result of the setting of these arrangements. So, you know, for mine, the narrative for the amendment doesn't line up with the reality of how those applications were being ventilated in front of the commission. And there are a number of other ways that you think the legislation could have come at the issue, including by setting some kind of mandatory baseline for any exemption rate application to get over the top of, as opposed to what the legislation does, which is effectively ban them in absolute.
I think another thing to keep an eye on as well is the Greens were quiet in their additional comments to the Senate inquiry report into this legislation when it was being considered by the Senate committee. Barbara Pocock, their industrial relations spokesperson, has highlighted her desire for there to be changes to the Fair Work regs, which obviously can't form part of this legislation, being a regulatory change that would expressly require, even where exemption rates are still used, annualised salary arrangements are still used, that employers will need to keep time and attendance records around when penalty rates and overtime rates would apply, even if employers are, you know, undertaking things like a contractual offset. So, you know, there's a point there where the Fair Work regs already do that, but it'll be interesting to see whether some sort of deal behind the scenes was done, which is quite often the case, like we know in the Senate, whether the government has agreed with the Greens to introduce some sort of change, follow-up change to the Fair Work regulations as well.
Certainly from my perspective as a resources industry representative and someone who works extensively with resources companies in Western Australia, it does further complicate arrangements and seems to be a 9-to-5, Monday to Friday, Melbourne and Sydney concept, pardon me for being parochial, which doesn't sit easily with the compressed rosters and other arrangements in the mining industry. It's odd that you would make overtime on a weekend or a penalty on a weekend sacrosanct in circumstances where the industry, mining industry in Western Australia, has been operating with compressed rosters and very generous non-worked periods compensated by very generous worked pay during worked periods. How that's going to work when the changes are made and some of the existing flexibilities in the mining award are potentially challenged. Jess, you mentioned the work from home dilemma, and I guess you've captured it quite well in the sense that you've identified that while there is a push to protect penalty rates at the same time, and those penalty rates seem to be based in a concept from decades ago of people working Monday to Friday, having a weekend off, having time to go to church on Sundays, all of the old penalty arrangements were built off the way that society worked 100 years ago. And that's when those provisions were first introduced. How does that sit with the work from home and workplace flexibility changes, and particularly the push from the Victorian government, the Greens, and the ACTU for greater work from home arrangements?
Certainly. So this is obviously a big issue for a lot of employers. We're at a time here that a lot of employers are still struggling to get their workforces back to the office after COVID. And we mentioned COVID and it seems so many years ago, but that's the reality for a lot of workplaces out there. And we're seeing increasingly employers having to issue formal directions to get staff back to the office. Also, I guess in terms of with a competitive labour market at the moment as well, we've got a situation where to even attract staff at the moment, employers are having to offer working from home as a perk, or having to, you know, potentially paying people more to come back into the office as well. So at a time when this is a big issue for employers, we've got a situation, as you said, Duncan, where we've got the Victorian government coming out and saying they're going to dabble in federal laws by trying to introduce something in their own state system. We'll see how that goes, though, in terms of whether that will actually be enforceable.
And that will only apply to state system employees in Victoria, which is effectively the governments and non-corporations. Is that right?
I think that the policy commitment there goes broader than that, actually. I think Jacinta Allen was talking about it applying to all private sector employees within Victoria as well, which...
Oh, interesting constitutional fights on the horizon there.
I know.
And trying to underpin it with the discrimination law anchor point as opposed to a workplace relations-based issue.
Oh, back to the constitutional fights of the 90s and 2000s.
So I think that's so I think in terms of that, I think the likelihood of that they said that they'll look to introduce legislation to Parliament there in Victoria in next year sometime ahead of their election, which will have to be held by November. But I think if we look more broadly as well, that this is at a federal level, as you mentioned, Duncan, we've got the Greens pushing for a minimum of 2 days, people having the right to have at least 2 days working from home. And this was actually an amendment the Greens tried to push onto the penalty rates bill. And we know there that the government sided with Coalition to defeat that amendment to the bill. So it'll be interesting to see whether the Greens continues to push that on, you know, any further industrial relations legislation. We know from the federal government doesn't seem to be particularly eager to legislate in the area, although, you know, I guess a term of government's quite a long one. But I think realistically, the point that most employees should be keeping an eye on at the moment in this work from home debate is the test case that's currently being run by the Fair Work Commission in relation to the Clark's private sector award. So this has come out of the back of the Modern Awards review from 23-24, and of the Fair Work Commission's own initiative, it's commenced proceedings to insert a working from home term into the Clark's Award. And the intent there is this to really be a test case with the potential for other awards to have a similar term inserted there. So this is a live issue at the moment. We know that employee and employer groups were asked to put proposals forward by in August, so last month, and that stakeholders have until the 23rd of September now to provide responses to that. There seems to be, as you'd imagine, a real split between unions and employer groups and what's being proposed. So we know there's the ACTU and the Australian Services Union are pushing a proposed clause that provides a right to request process for work from home arrangements, as well as a process by which employees may refuse this request on reasonable business grounds. That the clause that they're proposing must also consider the request on a case-by-case basis, and importantly would apply a presumption towards approving the request. And I think that the final bit there is essentially around this concept that an employee who works from home must be covered by the same employment conditions as employers working on employer premises. So I think what we've got at the moment is we've got the Section 65 right to request under the for flexible working arrangements under the Fair Work Act. So unions are essentially arguing here that there's a stigma attached to having to use those provisions. And we know that Section 65 is limited by those who have, say, a caring responsibilities or a particular age or have a disability or other type sort of protected attributes, so to speak, where this Clark's Award term would provide a blanket, right to request working from home with the presumption towards accepting that request, not just for those people who might have caring responsibilities, but really any one of the 2 million people covered by the Clark's Award in the country. So that's a big one for employers to watch out in this debate.
It's a really good point. And your point about the 2 million people is well made. The Clark's Award is historically seen as relatively benign and not the subject of industrial disputation or agreement making. But the introduction of provisions like this, I think, is going to produce a lot more disputation and make that award, I guess, more relevant and the subject of greater disputation at the work front in an area of the economy that has traditionally been relatively lacking in conflict, which perhaps is going to contribute to employers looking at other solutions, whether it's contracting out individual flexibility agreements, enterprise bargaining, which has not been widespread in the clerical sector. It seems to me like perhaps clerical is the thin end of the wedge. And it sort of ties in with the fact that most employment growth and union representation growth in the last 5 years, and certainly during the term of the first Albanese government, has been in the government sector. And obviously those clerical office-based jobs are heavily found in the government sector. So it would appear that that's the group of workers who are the subject of the policy change that's being looked at here. On the flip side, Michael, what can employers do? I mean, how do you make sure that a worker who's got the right to work 2 days a week is actually working and producing work at a productive level and solving the productivity problem? I've been reading some media articles this week where senior business leaders are suggesting that the inability to properly understand what people are doing when they work from home is a real drag on productivity. And if it continues, could see jobs lost. What can employers do from a surveillance and other perspective?
Yeah, Duncan, that's a great teaser for what's going to be the second part of this podcast series. We've dug into a lot, I think, in this first session in around working from home and also the penalty rates bill. You foreshadowed something that, you know, we'll spend a bit of time talking about in the second part of the series, which is in and around workplace surveillance and particular workplace surveillance as it relates to working from home. But just before we leave today's discussion, probably the two things that also occur to me, and you've touched on one of them already in and around the individual flexibility arrangements, is that just harking back to the penalty rates and overtime amendments, it does make clear that the individual flexibility arrangements that exist as award terms currently are not touched by these changes. So in addition to common law contracts, there is the opportunity through the award structure for employers to explore flexibility and relief from things like penalty rates and arrangements for when work is performed through the IFA structure. It's going to be interesting also, I think, and Jess has already kind of foreshadowed that there might be some interpretation that needs to occur in relation to the extent of these new amendments. One could expect that that's going to be ventilated through this Clark's test case. Yeah, if you look at the two counterpoint positions being taken by the union and the employer groups, obviously Jess has already spoken about what the ACTU and ASU position is in relation to setting up some more stringent safeguards and guardrails in and around these flexible rights. Employer groups like the AI group, for example, have taken a somewhat different approach in their submissions and talked about, well, what are the things that need to come out of the award for the purpose of opening up the ability to work from home? Some of those things that need to come out that they've identified would, I think, necessarily touch on triggers for when things like overtime and loadings and penalties might be triggered under the award, which intersects directly with this debate about whether, in fact, that is now sacrosanct as a result of the legislative amendment that's occurred. So it's very much, I think, going to be a case of there'll be some heavy lifting, I think, done by the Commission in the near term, interpreting those provisions as it grapples with that Clark's test case.
Thanks, Michael. And we'll look forward to our next catch-up where we're going to be talking about the flip side of the coin that we talked about today. Obviously, what we've discussed today is the increased regulation that's occurring and, in some cases, re-regulation. Concepts have been cemented or re-established in the regulatory system that are perhaps quite historical and are very much focused on employee benefits. The flip side of the coin is how employers are going to make use of things like workplace surveillance, artificial intelligence to solve the problems that have been caused by the re-regulation of the workplace. And certainly there's a lot of interesting discussion to happen on that score, in particular because business always has a way of reacting to regulation in an innovative way, and certainly things on the horizon around workplace surveillance and AI may have an impact on job numbers, job design, and a whole lot of other factors which will run contrary to some of the re-regulation that we've talked about today. So we look forward to catching up with you next time. And for those of you in podcast land, stay tuned.